Create Art Podcast, KDOI Rebroadcast, Conversations on Empathy with Monsell Carty. Hello, friend. This is Timothy Kim O'Brien, your head instigator for Create Art Podcast, where I use my 20 plus years of experience in art and education to help you tame that inner critic and create more than you consume. This episode is a rebroadcast from my old podcast, KDOI Podcasts. And this is from season 3 of that old show. And in season 3, I took on different topics and brought in others around me that I knew had an opinion on them. And, you know, we went ahead and talked about it for, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes to an hour. And this episode, we are talking with Monsell Carty, who I used to work with. And in his day job, he was doing, you know, customer service work. And his nighttime or his passion was stand-up comedy. So we're talking about how he uses empathy in both arenas, as well as his day-to-day life, where he definitely needs to use empathy. So let's get that conversation going on for you right now. Welcome back, friends. Welcome to KDOI Podcasting, Chemo's Den of Iniquity, where we create more than we consume. I am your head instigator, Timothy Kim O'Brien. Sounds like an X-Men character or a mutant superpower. Empathy is essential for being able to convey what you see or experience and reproduce it for your audience in order for them to be able to comprehend. Also, you need it if you're going to work with others. Now, it's not necessarily ESP, but if you are close and paying close attention, you should be able to accurately guess what the other person is thinking. Now, let's go to Merriam-Webster and see what they say. The action of understanding, being aware of, being sensitive to, and vicariously experiencing the feelings, thoughts, and experience of another of either the past or present without having the feelings, thoughts, and experience fully communicated in an objectively explicit manner. Wow. The imaginative projection of a subjective state into an object so that the object appears to be infused with it. Now, our quotes come from Harper Lee. You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb into his skin and walk around in it. And Ernest Hemingway, when people talk, listen completely. Most people never listen. Lastly, Aristotle, to perceive is to suffer. Now, Harper Lee was an American novelist, best known for To Kill a Mockingbird, published in 1960. Immediately successful, it won the 1961 Pulitzer Prize and has become a classic of modern American literature. Ernest Hemingway, who doesn't know him? Come on now. Was an American journalist, novelist, and short story writer. His economical and understated style, which he termed the iceberg theory, had a strong influence on 20th century fiction, while his adventurous lifestyle and his public image brought him admiration from later generations. Aristotle was an ancient Greek philosopher and scientist born in the city of Chagria in the north of classical Greece. Along with Plato, he's considered the father of Western philosophy. Now, the very first definition I think is comprehensive as to what empathy means to me. We need to have an understanding and being aware to our partners, whether they are business, romantic, or just colleagues along this journey. For the quotes, I think I enjoy Ernest Hemingway's the most. Agree that most people never listen. They just wait for their turn to talk. So let's not let this happen in this conversation. And let's get this conversation started. All right, everybody. So this is Timothy Kim O'Brien at Chemo's Den of Iniquity. And this week we are talking about empathy. Now, folks, empathy is not an X-Men character or a mutant superpower. I'm here to tell you. It may be a DC superpower character, but I'm a Marvel guy, so empathy is not part of our world. However, I do want to let you all know in on the definition, which we talked about earlier here. It's being made aware of, being sensitive to, and vicariously experiencing feelings, thoughts, and the experiences of other people, past or present, without having the feelings, thoughts, and experience fully communicated in an objectively explicit manner. That's a huge, long definition, folks. Wrap your head around it. It's going to be in the show notes, so you're not going to be tested on it yet. But my guest will be tested on it, and we'll get to the guest in just a second here. But we've got, let's see here, three quotes that I think are really interesting. One's from Harper Lee, and she says, you never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb inside his skin and walk around in it. Ernest Hemingway says, when people talk, listen completely. Most people never listen. And then our good friend Aristotle, who's a good friend of Socrates, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure there, to perceive is to suffer. And you've been hearing a little bit of chortling in the background, folks. So I want to bring on my guest here today. It's my proud privilege. I've worked with this guy for a couple of years now. Mansell Carty, fantastic man, man about town here, artist in his own right. Hopefully soon to be podcaster. I'm trying to influence him to do some good podcasts because I know he's got a lot to say, and I'd like to bring him on the air here. So, Mansell, the show, the floor is yours. Empathy. What do you think about empathy? What does that mean to you?
Well, it's walking a mile in somebody else's shoes without actually walking that mile. Just clear understanding of how they're feeling. And it's a rough thing, because I don't know how to say that. It's rough. It's rough because your other beliefs get in contrast with your empathy. Like, if you don't believe somebody should feel that way, kind of would make you feel not so empathetic to their situation. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So it's a double-edged sword.
So you're kind of saying our own bias and prejudice, maybe that's the word. And if you all know the word that I'm speaking about, kdoipodcasting@gmail.com, shoot me an email, correct me on my pronunciation here. But our prejudices, there we go, that's the word, can get in the way of us having empathy towards others.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Sweet. Definitely. That's why they pay me the big bucks here.
To simplify a point that I was making. Thank you.
That's all right. I'm a simple kind of guy. You know from working with me. I'm very simple. Very simple. So yeah. For you, in your life, in your artistic endeavors and all that good stuff, how are you using empathy to possibly reach out to your audience or to collaborate with other people? Because I've seen your Facebook stuff pop on where you're with other people and you're really communing with them and having good conversation. How do you use that empathy in that situation?
Well, that's a good question, because I have to, because I've realized being here now that my life experiences are ridiculous, and my core, ridiculous in a good way, my core beliefs are something different, and how I view the world is completely different how somebody else views the world. And I know that might seem weird that it's like something that's new to me, but if you keep the same circle for a long time, you share the same views. So only when you open your circle and let other things in that you realize, hey, it's a whole lot of different out here. And when you have a core belief that's challenged, anybody would say, like, whatever. That's not right. That's not cool. You shouldn't cry about that. Get up and dust yourself off and keep it on there, buddy. It's not that bad, even though to them, it, from their point of view, it's something ridiculous, you know, something that would invoke a different emotion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we got to be cognizant of that. That's why, well, I'm a Sagittarius, so I go wandering around naturally anyways. You know, I've been up here in Virginia now for, 5 years. And I'm like, I feel the need to move because I used to move every year from when I was 12 all the way up to when I was like 41. Every year I'd have a new place, new group of friends, and new experiences, new challenges. And that's really helped me with my empathy, is to, you know, going out there and connecting with other people. And I don't want to say forcing myself to try and understand their point of view. It's just the way I naturally am built. So mm-hmm. I want to understand other people's point of view. Mm-hmm. And does that understanding for you help you with your empathy and to be able to make better art with your collaborations with other people?
Definitely. If you can see the world from somebody else's perspective and actually get the same emotions that they might be having, mm-hmm. it changes the conversation completely. It changes the conversation to being more compatible, more simpatico, you know, more connected. And it works wonders. It works wonders. It goes from, push and pull to let's calmly sit here and discuss this. It takes the violence out of the conversation. It takes the your side versus my side to the we're on the same team here. Let's figure this out. So, yeah, definitely, definitely. And in my experiences with multiple walks of life and seeing where they came from, like, we were talking earlier before the podcast about racism and such. Me, yes, I'm black. Yeah.
No way. No way. Couldn't tell. I couldn't tell from looking at you here on Squadcast. Thank you, Squadcast, anyways. Couldn't tell that you were black.
Yeah, but I'm not African-American in the sense where my family came from different countries and they have different values, no matter that they were here in mm-hmm. New York City and Harlem in the 80s. And that led me to believe that you are a product of your environment, but you could always learn two things from looking at somebody's situation, what to do and what not to do. You know, so it's like, what do you want to be like and what do you not want to be like? So how I was raised, and I would believe that everybody would have these same values, but even family members, you know, that weren't raised the same, don't have the same values. And mm-hmm. it's different. It's different. So being here and kind of being tossed into a group of who I'm supposed to hang out with, who I'm supposed to look like, who I'm supposed to act like, was kind of different. But at first, it was definitely push and pull for me to me saying, I'm not like you. Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand this. I don't understand what you mean. I don't understand what's going on. Get it together. Like, I'm here. I'm good. Mm-hmm. You can do the same thing. By not clearly understanding where they're coming from and seeing that the emotional, you know, feelings that these things bring up. Like, ooh. Number one, I told you about my experiences with racism here and an Army sanctioned trip to Gettysburg.
I've actually done that trip to Gettysburg when I was working for the VA, but go ahead.
Yes, it was nice. We were just supposed to go there, see some sights, mm-hmm. snowboard. It was good. everybody, my brother came down from Portland, mm-hmm. and a couple of the soldiers from the, I forgot what it's called, where we met.
Mm-hmm. our place of business.
Yeah.
This thing that we have.
Exactly. The WT. There we are. Mm-hmm. Where a couple of soldiers from there came with me. Everything was nice. Stayed at the hotel. We're going out. It's Gettysburg's a small city. It's a college town. And there wasn't much to do. We got there early on a Thursday night. We were supposed to stay Friday and Saturday to snowboard. So Thursday night is anything really going on. They sent us to a horrible strip club, and we thought it was a bar at first. And they're like, when we got there, we were like, mm-hmm. "Oh, this doesn't look like a bar."
I mean, it looks like a bar, but we have naked ladies exactly. jumping around. Exactly.
So we got out of there post haste, and mm-hmm. spent the next day snowboarding. The Friday night, just big restaurant, we love it. It's definitely a bar, and it's definitely where locals go. So, having a good time. My brother, who is raised with me, we're not blood brothers, but he's raised with me, and he's Puerto Rican Italian. And two other white males, one Spanish female, and one white female. That makes up the group, and me and my brother. So we're ordering food. My brother and I usually order the same thing, so we don't just, we keep it. Mm-hmm. If you like it, I'll like it. So we order the same version of a chicken sandwich. And everybody gets their food. I get my chicken sandwich with a ginormous Confederate flag stuck through the middle. Now.
Oh, jeez.
Exactly. See, and that is it. That reaction from the table, not from me, from the table was like, "Rawr! What the hell? Outrage!" Mm-hmm. Marcel, on the other hand, that thing right over my head. I didn't know what was going on. I'm like, "Why is everybody upset? What's going on here?" And it took me a second to realize. I was like, I was only a string of lights with the light bulb out. Me. I was the only bean in a whole pot of rice. So
I'm going to steal that from you. I like that phrase. The only bean in a pot of rice.
Yes. And I was like, okay, so apparently this is something bad. So who knew? So I'm trying to figure out. So, of course, I poll the audience. It's like, why are you guys so mad? Oh, it's a Confederate flag. And it's like, why is it only in yours and you and him have the same sandwich? Mm-hmm. Oh.
Bingo. Yep.
Yes. So I thought to make a joke out of it because, as you know, like, I'm not African-American. My family is French, British, and Dutch. And it just so happens, like, she caught me out of all of them. Like, and my name reflects, my entire name reflects how non-American I am. So it's like, so I ordered a beer and I was like, if you have to check my ID, here it is. And I'm like, so what's up with the Confederate flag? And she gives me the whole, it's the heritage, it's this, and you are in Gettysburg. So me and my infinite wisdom is, I liken it to Nazis. Of course, I grew up in Germany. And they wiped all that from from everything, took down everything. And yeah. So I took it from there. I was like, well, you know, we don't celebrate people that lose. So I'm like, but you lost. Like, how do we just celebrate the losing team? Like, we are traitors and we lost, but it's my heritage. Like, you want to be? I thought it was funny. I thought I would get a laugh out of it.
Right.
Didn't go out the way I thought it would.
So the waitress didn't appreciate your humor at because you appreciated them putting the Confederate flag in your chicken burger, but they didn't appreciate being told that they're losers and they're traitors.
But it's like, that's factually accurate. Like, so it's a funny thing that I'm just like, hey, you're supporting the losers there and traitors. You want that in your heritage? Do you? Do you? You know, so it's like, that's a joke. Laugh. No. I've met with anger and being ostracized from, you know, talking, whatever she came to the table. And I tried to explain to her, I was like, hey, I know where this was going, but, you know, I'm French, British, and Dutch, and I was trying to speak German to her, and nothing was working. She was not happy with me.
Right. Well, I mean, you were trying to reach out. You're trying to be empathetic. You're trying to understand it from her point of view, but she didn't want to understand from your point of view.
Yes. And that definitely led me to figure out, like, why are people so attached to it, you know, the flag, and to see things from their perspective and what emotional, you know, charges they have, because there was a whole lot of the opposite emotional charge at my table, and I was neutral for both reasons. Like, I don't know what she was trying to say. That flag doesn't really mean anything to me because I wasn't born into that whole thing, you know, so it's like, why do you guys feel like that? And that gave you the whole demographic of my table. So it's like, they're more upset than I am. So I feel like I should be upset. Like, should I be mad? Like, is this something?
If it means nothing to you, you know, that's what it means. You know, if it has no context for you, if it has no meaning for you, has no connection for you, you feel the way that you feel about it, you know, which is probably nothing. I mean, if I were to see something, if I were to go to, like, to Romania and see something, somebody puts a flag on my burger and I have no context, I'm going to be like, okay, whatever. You know, I look French Canadian, I guess, and the Romanians don't like us French Canadians. I don't know if that's a fact. But if you do know if that's a fact, KDOIpodcasting@gmail.com. Email us, let us know. May, you know, somebody out there maybe knows the world war that Canada fought with Romania. I don't know.
Let's see, like, yeah, and I try, like, that's the thing. Like, that bias makes it hard for her to see it from my standpoint, where I'm over here like, hey, I got nothing to do with this. Like, you picked the wrong one. Like, you meant for that one over there, or that guy over there, not this guy. You didn't do that. It kind of like, I didn't see it. And
sure.
And it's like, I understand why you would think that, but I don't understand why it's so jarring for the people at the table, and why was it required for you to do that? Like, why did you feel like that was a good idea? So it really didn't sit well with me. So it's like, I always look at it to the way of how people react, because I feel like politics and racism and healthcare, and everybody's so emotionally connected to these things that I feel like it's on par with their core beliefs and their morals and their values. And it's not, I don't know, I don't process that with the emotional part of my brain, because these things you can quantify this, you know what I mean? So it's like, why is there so much emotion in this?
Right. Right. In the whole flag thing in your burger.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think part of it too is, you know, our upbringing. I'm from Chicago. I'm from that area there. And when I moved down here to Virginia, when I was getting my master's degree, as we were talking earlier in the pre-show, you know, I'm seeing, you know, Confederate flags left and right. Now I went into the Air Force and, you know, I was in Texas, and I mean, I ran into racists down there, but it was a different kind of racist. Down here, it's like in Virginia, it's like they're still, you know, they haven't gotten over 1864. They're still fighting that war. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the War of Northern Aggression. And the first time I heard that was when I moved down here. And I was like, well, no, it's a civil war. War between the states. No, nope, Northern Aggression. Okay. Whatever. And it's a whole other, you know, they have a whole other mindset of it down here, not excusing it, but they want to, I think they want to stay in their ignorance because it's easier for them to do that. They have a support system that helps them out. One of the things I noticed when I moved down here is if I wasn't originally born and raised in Virginia, I was a transplant, and mm-hmm. I was occupying their space. And I'm like, I am adding to your economy. Mm-hmm. I'm making Virginia great again, you know, by being here, right? Where's my, you know, make Virginia great again? My MAVA hat, you know, instead of my MAGA hat. Oh, my MAVA hat. Come on. Yeah. And I could never understand, you know, if you're not in this tight group. And then we have all of us transplants when I was down in Richmond that, you know, are going to school down there at VCU. $100 of VCU, by the way. I only owe you $83,000, but you can give me $100. Don't send your kids there. Don't send your kids there. It's got VD. It's not good. But the alumni Association will never call me again. Yes. Yeah. But it was a whole mentality of, you know, well, you ain't from here. You're just here to take our women away from us and take from our land and then go back to your liberal lands of whatever. And I'm just like, I'm just here trying to get a degree. That's it.
I'm trying to learn.
You know, I'm trying to learn some stuff. You got a good school over here that, you know, has got some excellent professors. I'm just trying to learn. And, you know, I'm one of those types that I learned this in the Air Force, you know, when we went to Somalia and all the other places that I went to. You know, you go with a soft foot. You go with a reverence and respect of the place you're going. You're a visitor. Mm-hmm. And I approached it, you know, the same way. Hey, I'm coming to Virginia as I'm a visitor here. I may or may not stay forever. Now I will because I have a 30-year mortgage. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, you know, they're going to bury me in my backyard. But, you know, if I come as a visitor, if I come with that humbleness, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, the people that live here will catch on to that. I'm trying to send out those vibes, and hopefully they catch on to it. And so I'm trying to send out the vibes of, hey, you know, if you're empathetic, I'm here with you. And, you know, I mean, you no harm, but it sounds like this gal up in Gettysburg was shutting that off entirely. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to be empathetic with you. Wanted to maybe instigate something with you and kick you out of their establishment, you know, and just go, well, see, he's acting like a fool. I'm going to kick him out, you know, because he's offended by our heritage. And that's how they, well, I don't know her personally, but that's how they bait people into the reaction. Ooh, like that.
Yeah,
they shut down the empathy and then just go poof like that.
And that would justify their beliefs. That's a good point. that's definitely a good point. And you know, I always look at that like, how could you not, given all the information that we have now, how could you not be empathetic for anybody? And it definitely goes back to when I talk about healthcare. Mm-hmm. Why don't you want the people around you to be healthy?
It makes economical sense.
Yeah, but it makes sense as a person. It makes sense.
Absolutely.
You know how many diseases we get from coughing, sneezing, touching, breathing.
37. I don't know. 42. I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on TV.
Did you stay at a...
I stayed at a whatever it was. Yeah, Holiday Inn last night.
Yes.
Holiday Inn Express. Oh. Got my free breakfast. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so it's like, as a person, why do you not want the person next to you to be good, to be okay, to be healthy, to be safe?
It's us against them mentality. It's why should I pay for your health care? Why should I pay for your education? Well, folks, we all pay taxes. April 15th is right around the corner. You know, get your taxes in.
Mm-hmm.
You can be late this year. Yeah, for some reason, you can be late. I don't know why. But the talks that I've had is, well, you know, I don't want to pay for other people. And it's like, but you already are.
That one, you know? That part. It's, but it's, they're human. Like, mm-hmm. I feel bad when I, like, if I accidentally hit an animal while I'm driving, like, because mm-hmm. I feel like, so I don't experience their consciousness, but you are aware that they have consciousness and you mm-hmm. just snuff their life out. You know what I mean? So it's like, I didn't kill another human, but I killed something and I can feel that.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I could feel that way about an animal, how do you not feel that about a human? Like, how do you not come to that understanding that this person shares so much similarities to you
mm-hmm.
that, you know, their emotions might be the same, might be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, with this empathy that we're talking about here today, let's turn it to professional life here. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get into what your job is right now. I'm not going to say the corporation that you're working at, but if you want to, by all means, go mm-hmm. for it. But they owe you $100 if you do so. But I mean, you know, being in the customer service realm, shall we say? I know for my job, I'm social services, customer service. You're dealing with customers on the phone and whatnot. Like we were talking about that empathy part, and specifically, I'm thinking about the Ernest Hemingway quote that we have here. When people talk, listen completely. Most people never listen. How does that empathy help you out in your professional life?
Well, in my professional life, I work for OFDA, the Office of Foreign Disaster Relief and Assistance. And we merged, we're under USAID. And that's the United States Assistance. I totally forgot what USAID stands for. Anyway, we merged with Food for Peace, and now mm-hmm. we've became the Bureau of Humanitarian Assistance. And I understand that the people that might be balking at me for results so they can use their emails, so they can use their phone, so they can get on with the mission and directive they have,
mm-hmm.
they're doing it because they have a greater purpose. You know, it's not just, this is hindering them from feeding somebody, ordering the water during a disaster, you know, something like that, doing mm-hmm. press releases so people know that what's going on down here or over there or wherever. So
right.
That definitely, having empathy for people that you know that are going through something stressful that you wouldn't wish on anybody. Not only that, I mean, they're are responding to a place that is disaster, and they're helping people who are in a highly stressed state. Something is not working for the person that needs the help, and you have that ability. No matter what they say or how they say it, you have to definitely put yourself in their shoes. Like, they're trying to help somebody. They can't right now, and that is frustrating. And that's what leads. That's what leads to how they speak to you. So you have to. You definitely have to put yourself in somebody's shoes, especially in customer service.
And it makes you that much more effective, because if you can show them, you know, just through the power of your voice and how you're responding to their anxiety, their anger. And you're showing them that, you know, hey, I'm there with you, to use a Bill Clinton phrase, I feel your pain. And we know Bill Clinton felt a lot of things, including pain.
True.
I didn't want to go there, but you made me go there. You psychically linked with me, and you're like, do a Bill Clinton joke. Too easy.
I definitely, in my head, was like, hey, the only thing he felt. So I was like, okay, he stayed away from that. Then you go right into it. I was like, maybe not.
Oh, come on. We go right for the jugular here at KDOI. Absolutely. And if you're a Bill Clinton fan and you were offended by that joke, you can email Munsell here at KDOIpodcasting@gmail.com. I'll get that email straight to him. Oh, wait, no, I made the comment, not him. But, you know, being in customer service like that, I mean, you know, it's frustrating that you can't solve their issue for them. They may have to go to another route to get that issue resolved. Mm-hmm. You have the resources and the power to do what you can do. And you can try to think outside of the box as much as you can. And you understand their mission. And it helps that you're understanding their mission. But there's only so much you can do. And you know, the customers that I've dealt with, they just want somebody to hear them and understand them.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize, okay, you know, maybe you can't do this. They got it. But they just want you to hear and understand their point of view, get it across, and then they move on usually. Or they write a bad, nasty gram and they send an email to the podcast, and there we are. There we are.
And I definitely notice that if you respond with kindness, you usually get kindness in return. Like,
yeah,
for me as an IT person, the more people get deep into conversations, the easier it is for people to explain me their problem. Because when they're talking in the heat of the moment, they're like, computer doesn't work. What's wrong with it? I don't know. It don't work. What are you trying to do? Get it to work, mm-hmm. obviously. So we have to.
No, you don't want that computer to work.
You know, it's like, thank you, Captain Obvious, with your acute perception of stating the obvious. So, yeah, but you diffuse the situation. Like, I've been in a situation where a lady came in. No, she was on the phone. And she kind of got in a sparring match with the team lead. And I wasn't impressed with the way he was handling it. It's like, calm down there. Listen to her. And so she came in and she, you know, he started talking to her before she even opened her mouth. And I didn't know what to do. So I was like, all right, I'll take her. And we're going to go here in the back room and chill out for a second and figure out what the hell was going on there. Like, because never met her before, never dealt with her. I was like, all right, chill. Give me your phone. Hand your phone to the person. This is the issue. We're aware of this issue. Here it is. Talking to her in there, you know what I mean? She was just upset that he wasn't listening. But his deal was, yeah, he wasn't listening. However, he knew what the problem was. And he was just like, hey, can you fix it? like, hey, we can fix it just for a second. I don't want to know all the your extra fluff. Let me fix your phone. And mm-hmm. he wasn't just listening. And I would say that's a man trait. Like, sometimes women just vent to vent. And I always put that as a precursor when people tell me stuff. It's like, there's two responses you can get from me. Either I'm going to fix it, or I'm just going to get listen. So let me know what you're looking for before we get in there. Because if you're just looking for somebody to listen, I'll just listen. But my textbook response is, you have a problem. Mm-hmm. I need to fix it. You know, so, but yeah, talking mm-hmm. to her, pulled her in the back room and talked to her. By the time we were done talking, I understood why she was upset. Because A, it was a problem that she didn't see coming. And she couldn't tell it was happening. Only the people on the other side. And her boss saw her email, instead of sending from our official email, it sent from her from a iCloud email that it created for her. Yeah, because Apple was trying to get people to move into iCloud, so it took your news username and appended it to iCloud, and you had an account. Yeah, so
friends, don't let friends use Apple products.
It's going to be between Apple and Amazon. If they ever merge, it's over.
Oh, yeah, it's done. It's done. Now, we actually talked about that in the other podcast that I co-host on Podrec, is the future of podcasting and Amazon, you know, getting possibly getting into the ring for podcasting. And we were just like, you know, if it's Amazon and Apple, everybody just, you know, pack it up and go home. You're not going to compete with both those powerhouses. Now, if they go head to head with each other, my money's on Amazon. Yeah. But then I'm a Samsung guy, so I want to see Apple get creamed.
See, Apple is just about marketing. Apple's always behind the barker, and they'll do something. They'll do something like, "Hey, look at what we did!" I'm like, come on, that's so old. Like, I'll venture off on this tangent because I'm a techie. But in Germany, when I was in high school, we had video conferencing. I didn't have an iPhone. The network, it wasn't LTE, it was the network UMTS, is the type of GSM band that it was that allowed you to video conference on a regular phone. And it had a camera that was on the side. It was a Samsung that rotated back and forth. It was a flip phone, but the camera itself, it had a little knob on the side. You rotated to the front and you rotated to the back. Yeah, a physical control. Nice. Yeah. And so we could video conference, not over Wi-Fi, over a regular phone. Yeah. And then,
not bad.
You hit, then FaceTime comes out. Wow. It's about 9 or 10 years later, and it's like the greatest thing ever. Like, no. No. I definitely have been doing this since I was like 18. I mean, not even. I was 17. Like, come on. They're behind the power curve, but they made it so beautiful. And 10 years after, 10 years after.
They got a great marketing team and they've got rabid fans that, you know, hang on their every word. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what their Apple's all about. Yes. But, you know,
we have iMessage. You can use it and like, so I'm, in my mind, I'm like, so like BlackBerry Messenger, except for Apple. You know,
well, you know, with Apple, you just throw an I in front of it and we created it. There you go. It's text messaging. No, iMessaging. Okay, no, but it's text messaging. It's been out long time. No, it's ours. iMessaging.
We called it. Yeah. So it's definitely like they are very, very, very good at selling late technology as something amazing.
And you know what? I didn't know we were going to go that far, folks, on this. That's okay, though. That's all right. So I'm going to reel you back in here. I'm going to reel you in a little bit. All right. So on the artistic side of the house here, artistically, how are you using empathy? How are you connecting with your audience? What are you doing artistic? Well, first and foremost, what's your next thing that you're doing for everybody?
Oof.
How can we get in with you and get in your scene and get in your hemisphere?
Well, film wise, we are working on an anti-smoking cessation film.
So you want people to smoke?
No. You
want people not to smoke?
That too. We're showing where the triggers of somebody who's not aware how smoking, even though we are aware that it's bad for us, cigarettes, that is.
Mm-hmm. But not vaping with CBD oil. No. That's good for you.
Yes. It leads from, you can see someone die or dying of lung cancer and still go outside and smoke a cigarette because you're addicted. And if you stop, but your friends smoke, or your family smokes, or you just stopped and people smoke around you, things like that. See how hard it is, you know, to stop a habit, and basically from a view that you can see where you came up with the habit, like why, what got you in there first time? Because it's available and it's around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're working on right now. That one called Ports of Habit. So lots of ports.
Nice.
Lots of
ports. I was gonna say that's a lot of double entendre and triple entendre and a lot of coded language. What we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm. So we definitely did a good one on that one. And we are looking to get our own radio show on 96.3 WERA. Mm-hmm. That one on FM radio. And then stand up. I have a 96.7 WERA. Yeah, but I also have a stand-up performance on March 8th. I'm not super aware of the details, but I will forward them to you in your email. So
you can put that perfect. Out. Well, we'll throw that in the we'll put that in the show notes there, and we'll definitely shoot that out to all the listeners that are out there and whatnot. So stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen, because you shot me the video of a stand-up thing that you did, which I thought was pretty damn good. And I used to run with some folks that were on Second City stage up in Chicago.
Mm.
So I know good stand-up. And when I saw your stuff, I was like, it's pretty damn good. This is not bad at all. This is really funny stuff and really cool stuff that you're talking about here. When you're in that stand-up mode, when you're standing in front of the crowd, for you, I know how I do it when I do stand up, when I'm in front of a crowd like that.
Mm-hmm.
For you, what is your thing that gets you connecting with that crowd? You know, some people are like, they look at one person and they just connect with that person, you know, even if they don't know them. And that helps the nerves and everything like that, and helps them give them better performance. What do you do?
What do I do? I blank out. I completely blank out. Like, I felt free up there, and it just started coming, and it didn't feel like, I feel like it's based off the first laugh. The first person to laugh, or the first laugh you hear, is free. It's like, wow, I'm not that bad. For me, and it's like, so that works. They're laughing, and all right. So I just go on, and I definitely interact more with my audience because I want them to know that I want them to feel like where I'm coming from, and most of my stand up is based on my life. As in, I'm here. I'm a. I don't even know how to put that. I'm trying to figure out how to put this in a funny way, but I'm basically a local immigrant. Like, I'm from here, but I just didn't grow up here. So it's like, I don't have all the same stuff that you have, but I'm from here. It's like, I always thought out there. I was like, they're like, dang, so when you moved to the States, I was born here. I lived here for a little bit, just left. But I'm American. I say that, you know, but I try to drag them in to see how from a outside perspective, how weird everything looks like, or how strange it is if you say things out loud. Like, that makes no sense. It's like, that is weird. That is weird.
Nice. Now, what does that do for you when you're, that's how you do it. That's how you do the empathy. What does that personally do for you when you're on stage like that? Gives you a good warm fuzzy. Why do you do it? Because a lot of people are scared to death of public speaking. And a lot of people go, you know, stand up, I'm not funny. And a lot of people that I know in improv and all that are like, I'm not trying to be funny. It just happens. And when you said blank out, I'm like, I know a lot of people that's how they operate. They just blank out and whatever happens, happens. Mm-hmm. What does it do for you?
What does it do for me? It's thoroughly enjoyable because of joy, because of elation, the sore happiness of a human that just to hear you speak. That is definitely a connection. It's like, if you don't know me, you actually feel me, though. You don't know me personally, but you feel like me. You feel like you understand me. You feel like you are aware of what decisions I would make, what if given any situation, because of what we just talked about.
Nice. That's a great way to go at it. That is a great way to go at it. I was going to say, I know for me, when I get up on that stage, for me, I enjoy like the battle of it. For me, it's getting the first laugh. Mm-hmm. Once I get that first laugh, I've got them in my back pocket. You know, and it's like that way when I'm at work and do the job that I do, which, you know, I'm work at the WTU and trying to help soldiers out do their transition. If I can get that soldier to laugh in a shitty situation that they're in, oh my God, we're going to have to go explicit here. But if I can get that soldier to laugh, it's just like for me being on stage, it's getting that first laugh. Then I know I'm in. That person has shared a moment with me. I've been able to bring their guard down a little bit. And they've expressed a little bit of an emotion with me. And that's, you know, that's kind of the secret to my success is I go for the laugh. I try to make everybody in that office laugh. And when I get on stage, I want everybody laughing in the audience. And it brings me a lot of joy. But then I also kind of to battle the butterflies in my stomach that naturally happen to everybody. I get antagonistic to the audience, especially when I'm doing like slam poetry. I'll get real antagonistic with the audience in my head. Now, on the outside, I'm happy-go-lucky guy. Everything's great. But inside my head, it's like I'm beating the crap out of the first three people in the first two rows here. I'm just going to beat them up right after the show is done. And, they talk smack about my mama in my head. That gives me the energy to go through and do a whole show. Whether it be an hour show or like a 3-minute spoken word piece. And that's kind of the energy that I get off of it. And then When I'm all the way done, I'm exhausted. It's like, hey, let's go grab a drink or a deep dish pizza and rock it out.
Yeah, that's amazing. And as it is a battle. I can see that. I can definitely see that. Me, it's just me. I like the challenge of making everybody laugh. It's, you know, you know you'll get some people with this, some people with that. And even with cultural content, it's like, if that'll work here, that'll work here, but will it work for everybody? Like the very first joke I told was without rehearsal, and it was a sign of my nervousness, and people laughed. And I was like, that is, I guess so. Because I thought about it on the way up. I was like, man, dang. Like, this is crazy. Like, I was walking from the back of the room to the stage, and I realized that there were only like four black people in here, and two of which were comics, one of which was my mom. And like, you know, so the first thing that came up to me is like, I don't look like I belong here. And I was like, oh Lord, they might call the cops. So because of the rash of calling the cops on black people from just doing normal stuff. So the first thing I got up on stage was like, hey, it's a good crowd out here. Shout out to all the white people. Just letting you know, I belong here. I'm supposed to be here. If you want to buy something, I will. Like, just that's the first thing, because that was the first thing that came to mind. I'm like, oh my God. Like, why is this guy on stage? You know, like, that was the first thing. The climate of whatever was on the news, like, get the cops calling you for barbecuing or just sitting in Starbucks. You know, it's weird.
Sitting in Starbucks of all places. Come on now. Oh, we're going to go down that rabbit hole. No, no, I'm pulling myself out of that rabbit hole. There we go.
Empathetic to how they felt about that Starbucks.
my God.
It's so strange. So it's definitely strange. So, but yeah, that whole thing, and they laughed, and I could not believe it, because I was literally making fun of 90% of the crowd, and they laughed at it. It was like, I just talk shit to you, to your face, about you or your people, and you were cool with that.
And that's how you gauge that audience. And if they're cool with that, you can go for another one. Mm-hmm. You can go for three of those back to back to back. Mm-hmm. Then you got to stray away from it for a little bit, but you know, you can go back to it anytime.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a great way to gauge that crowd. Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up here. But Montel, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing with us your experiences, your thoughts on empathy and how you're using it. Can you give our listeners out there, all 50 of them, can you give us some last words of wisdom about empathy, how we can use it, and how we can create more than we consume?
Well,
I know, big task. Yeah. I got it.
No, I'm good at improv.
Okay. No way. Wait a minute. Was that you in the video that I saw?
Empathy. The best way to use it is, you have to understand, nothing's new under the sun. Nothing's new under the sun. So anything that somebody's been through that you're not aware of, or you never experienced it, that could be you. Mm-hmm. You know, and me being a Buddhist, you can't help everybody, but you can just not hurt them. That's as simple as I can say it. You know, you can't do everything, that you can't save everybody. You can just not hurt anybody, or not hurt anybody. So, and I always like to tell everybody, smile more, it increases your face's value.
And it takes less muscles to smile.
Facts.
Just saying. That's what I hear anyways. That's what I read in the books.
Hey, you don't have any. Excellent. You don't have any wrinkles. So
I'm always smiling. I'm looking at you and I'm smiling. So that's doing me good. Hell, I should be paying you money like I pay my massage therapist and my chiropractor. There we go. And you can do that, folks, by going to a comedy club and looking him up and getting into one of his shows.
Facts.
And tip your bar staff. Tip them well. Don't tip them over. Tip them well. Well, again, so I do want to thank you for popping on here at KDOI Podcasting. Really appreciate your insights and your good conversation that we have here. Folks, if you want to get on the show here, it's super, oh my God, simple. I'll shoot you out 11 topics, and you pick out the one that you want to talk about. We've got quotes. We've got definitions, and we just go from there. Munsell did it. We've had other people go ahead and do it in the past couple of weeks. You can get right on the show here, kdoipodcasting@gmail.com. Pretty painless for you here today.
Definitely. Oh, man, painless.
All right. Supernovocaine. Supernovocaine. Timothy Kim O'Brien, Supernovocaine. That's the DC superhero. That's what it is. There we go. Supernovocaine. Knocking out Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent. All right, folks. Well, that's all for this week. Have yourself a great day, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Toodles.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation that we had on empathy. And if you would like to reach out and come onto the show, feel free to email me, Timothy@createartpodcast.com. And let's start that conversation about anything that you're interested in talking about in terms of your artistic practice. And if you got something out of the show, then please share it with a friend. You can do that through your podcast app, or you can do that through your social media channels. I'd really appreciate it. Until next time, go out there and create some art for somebody you love, yourself.